I'm Lina Ahmadu. Welcome to Health Chat. Zambian health authorities say a measles outbreak, which initially started in northwestern Zambia early this year, has now spread to other parts of the country. At least 475 people are infected so far. According to Health Minister Sylvia Masebo, authorities detected an outbreak in Sinazongwe and Pemba, two districts located in Zambia's southern province. All patients were not vaccinated against measles. The government has deployed rapid response teams in affected areas to offer vaccination and guidance on prevention measures. Chinese drug regulators have approved the world's first inhalable COVID-19 vaccine manufactured by CanSino Biologics. The company says the needle-free vaccine can be stored and administered more easily than intramuscular jabs. Scientists conducted a clinical trial on adult patients who had already received two doses of the Chinese injectable CoronaVac vaccine, a booster vaccine by inhalation. On day 28 provided robust antibody responses, according to the researchers. They say the nasal vaccines could block infection more effectively than those currently used by injection. No independent study has yet evaluated its effectiveness. Scientists from several countries, including Cuba, Canada, and the United States, are also conducting trials on inhalable vaccines against COVID-19. The Joint Monitoring Program report by the World Health Organization and UNICEF says half of healthcare facilities worldwide lack basic hygiene services. The report reveals that basic water and soap or alcohol-based hand rub are not available where patients receive care and at toilets in these facilities. Around 3.85 billion people use these facilities, putting them at greater risk of infection, including 688 million people who receive care at facilities with no hygiene services at all. We turn now to life expectancy. People in Africa are living longer, rising from 46 years to 56 years, according to the WHO. In its State of Health in Africa report, the UN Health Agency says healthy life expectancy in Africa increased by nearly 10 years between 2000 and 2019. The WHO report indicates that Africa has seen an increase in life expectancy because, among other things, it has benefited from better access to essential health services, some improvements in reproductive and child health, and progress made in the prevention and treatment of some infectious diseases. However, the experts caution against a significant increase in non-communicable diseases such as diabetes and hypertension. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Deborah McKelly, pediatrician, Arusha Lutheran Medical Center.
Life expectancy differs according to different regions of the world. And I guess this is solely dependent on the health status of the country, the socioeconomic status of the country, the demographics of the country. We expect, of course, the life expectancy in the more high-income and wealthier countries to be a bit higher than in low socioeconomic status countries. The gender of the person, the general genetics of the person, these are different factors that do have an effect on your life expectancy, your access to health care, your diet, your lifestyle that you currently live in, and of course, the political stability of the country, basically wars, crimes, all those have a big influence on life expectancy. Childhood health has a very big impact on your life expectancy. As a pediatrician, we believe that the first 1,000 days of life, so basically from birth to under five, those are the most important years to shape a child. And that's where you need to get it right nutritionally and socially also. Because these, they do not only have an impact on the growth of the child, they also have an impact on cognitive health. They have an impact on how this child will turn out in the long run. With respect to the current reports, it is encouraging as a clinician to see that our life expectancies have gone up. I think there have been so many advances in healthcare and a lot of advances economically in different countries. We're now having a population that is growing into adulthood. We're having a population that is growing into 80s, 90s, 100s. We don't have much investment in hospice or palliative care or old age homes. People grow into old age, but now what do we do with these people into old age? We know old age has got a lot of risk factors associated with it. I do wish to raise an alarm to countries, to clinicians, to start preparing for this age group.
That was Dr. Deborah McKelly, pediatrician at Arusha Lutheran Medical Center. Now, experts say medical advancements and breakthroughs are allowing people to live longer and healthier lives. However, many people are losing their lives due to health issues like malaria, HIV, obesity, and COVID-19. We wanted your reaction on the subject. Are people in Africa living longer compared to the older generations? What do you think is the most important factor to living a long and healthy life? This is what some of you had to say in Nigeria.
With all what diseases you have said, with all these diseases, pandemics, I don't think we have this generation have longer life expectancy.
Many women used to die of a child labor. And our children used to die of so many diseases. So it has helped so much. That is, medical technology has helped so much in this area.
By mere looking at what we have gone through for some time now, I think I would believe that the older generation, which is our forefathers, actually live longer than ours.
We've got a shoot in different types or variants of diseases, the latest being COVID. And of course, the numbers are very clear there, how many people were cut down by the COVID-19 disease or pandemic. And if you look at the numbers, it was not so 30 years ago. We also know that back then we had diseases that were exerting their negative effects, malaria, so many others. And malaria still is prevalent in Africa today. So we have a situation where we did not properly address diseases of the past and new ones have come to join the fray.
Presently, we have a lot of medical facilities that those that came before us may not have. But the challenges those of our own generation are facing now is the accessibility of those facilities. If those who have access to the medical facilities, certainly they will live longer than those who do not have the access.
Living healthy and having a long life is that as a person, you need to do exercises. We need to eat our natural food.
There are still some people that you believe that science also has improved in terms of food preservation. I think Africa, we don't actually need food preservation, because if we live on natural things, I think we will be able to achieve the longevity of the lives of our forefathers.
If you have a healthy earth or a healthy earth from your soil to your climate, your atmosphere and everything, you live healthier. But we're in an era again where issues of climate change have not been properly attended to. You see pollution of diverse sort, you see unhealthy levels of carbon emission. How will these factors not affect longevity? So these are all issues that we need to look at.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays, or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on Podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA and follow us on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays, or subscribe to the PCUSA podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA and follow us on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. British scientists say they have found a way to increase the supply of kidneys available for transplant by altering the blood type of the organ. The discovery could be life-changing for people on the kidney donor waitlist.
Chronic kidney disease has meant that Aisha Edmondson hasn't been able to work or spend time outside the house as much as she wants to. She's waiting for a kidney transplant, which could take up to 10 years.
During the pandemic, that's when I was told that I had 12 months to find a living kidney donor. And although I already knew that my condition was heading that way, it was still a bit of a shock, because I think that no matter how much you prepare, when you get news like that, you know, it's tough.
Researchers at the University of Cambridge have successfully altered the blood type of three donor kidneys. The research means that kidneys of different blood types could be made compatible for transplants if the donor kidney has its blood type altered to O, the universal blood type. Scientists took the oxygenated blood out of the donor kidney and then put blood infused with enzymes back in. This results in the kidney being converted to type O blood. A clinical trial hasn't yet been conducted. According to the National Health Service, 9% of total organ donations came from Black and ethnic minorities from 2020 to 2021.
People from ethnic minority backgrounds on average wait a year longer to receive a kidney transplant than people from a Caucasian background. So again, if this research helps to redress that balance, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Dr. McMahon's research will be published in the British Journal of Surgery later this year. And she wants to address minorities who might not be willing to donate.
Deaths from non-communicable diseases like cardiovascular disease, mental and neurological disorders, and diabetes have been rising in sub-Saharan Africa. They account for 37% of deaths in 2019, a big jump since 2000, when 24% of deaths were linked to non-communicable diseases, according to WHO. Health ministers in Africa have adopted a strategy recently to increase access to diagnosis, treatment, and care for these illnesses. I spoke with Dr. Prebo Barango, medical officer with WHO's Regional Office for Africa. Take a listen. Dr. Prebo Barango, thank you so much for joining us today. Non-communicable diseases are said to be on the rise on the continent of Africa. Please explain what non-communicable diseases are.
So non-communicable diseases are, simply put, diseases and conditions that you acquire based on adopting certain lifestyles. So they are also known as lifestyle diseases or lifestyle conditions, mostly, although there are some non-communicable diseases that you get based on genetics that you can inherit, but mostly they are conditions that you acquire based on adopting certain kind of lifestyles, which are called risk factors for them. So unlike communicable disease that has a causative agent, like malaria is transmitted by the vector mosquito, but TB is by the mycobacterium tuberculosis. Non-communicable diseases are conditions that you don't get from that kind of, you can't get it from sitting close to someone or using the same utensils as someone. Those are generally known as non-communicable diseases.
So we are looking at diseases like diabetes, cancer, high blood pressure. Talk to us about how much of a problem non-communicable diseases are in Africa, and what are some of the most common ones?
over the past few decades, non-communicable diseases has been increasing in the African region. And the reason is because it's not far-fetched. Now, the risk factors for non-communicable diseases, as I mentioned before, unhealthy diet, lack of physical activity, tobacco use and harmful use of alcohol, has been on the increase across all countries in the African region. So that's one. And two, the challenge of non-communicable diseases in the African region is that we contribute to the premature mortality burden. Premature mortality is defined by WHO as death between 30 and 69 years. And you know that this age group are the economically productive group. So it becomes both a developmental issue as well as a health issue. And the most common non-communicable diseases in the African region would include the ones you've mentioned now, diabetes, cardiovascular disease is the most common, followed by cancer, and then you have the chronic respiratory diseases, as well as diabetes. But for the African region, we also have non-communicable diseases that are peculiar to us. So sickle cell disease, peculiar to us, it's a genetic condition, is peculiar to the African region. Ministers of health in the African region also agreed that mental health and substance abuse, substance use disorders, injuries, eye health, ear health, oral health are also non-communicable diseases that are important for the African region.
Now, let's talk about the current urgencies in tackling NCDs. What would you say they are when we want to talk about disease control and disease prevention?
The urgency there is that it's robbing Africa of the economic base, economic power, premature mortality. So what we need to do is to implement what WHO calls best buy interventions. These best buy interventions are cost-effective interventions that most countries are able to implement irrespective of their socioeconomic status. We also know that significant investments have been made in communicable disease and maternal health issues. So what the focus is now is on decentralized and collaborative care for people with NCDs. So you can't have a vertical program looking at NCDs, but rather having NCD care integrated into the package of essential health services that everybody should get at the lowest level of health facility. Also, would be important to prevent, because we can't just keep mopping the floor, so to say. We also need to close the tap, so to prevent. Preventing means that making sure that the policies and the legislations to protect the population are available and are implemented well. So the policies to reduce harmful use of alcohol, the policies to prevent tobacco use, the policies to encourage healthy eating, as well as fit to make people more physically active. Those policies should also be implemented to reduce the burden.
Health ministers in Africa have adopted a strategy to increase access to diagnosis, treatment and care for these illnesses. What are the main pillars of the strategy and what will this look like for the patient on the ground?
Yeah, thanks. So this is really exciting period for non-communicable diseases in the African region. The reason is this. So the severe NCDs are things like type 1 diabetes, which is insulin dependent, sickle cell disease, rheumatic heart disease, hypertension, and those severe NCDs. In most African countries, access to care for these severe NCDs are usually in the urban centers, tertiary referral centers. So people that are in peri-urban or rural areas usually have limited access to care when they have these conditions. So what the strategy is aiming at doing is to capacitate the district level facilities, which is closer to the rural and peri-urban areas, to capacitate them to be able to diagnose, treat and manage these chronic and severe NCDs. Also strengthening the referral mechanisms between the district level and the tertiary referral facilities, but primarily to provide the district level facilities with enough, the human resource available there should have adequate training using simple protocols, and then to ensure that not just being trained, but they have the wherewithal to be able to provide this service. So they have the necessary medicines and diagnostic technologies that are available at this level of facility.
That's great, Dr. Prebu Barango. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Prebo Barango, medical officer with WHO's Regional Office for Africa. Now to West Africa in Senegal. To reduce the spread of HIV, a clinic in Dakar offers free opioid substitution to people who inject drugs. CPIAD is one of the first harm reduction centers in Senegal.
This is a special unit at the Fan Hospital in Dakar, commonly known as CPIAD. The drop-in clinic provides an opioid substitution therapy program to people with drug addiction. CPIAD aims to lower the spread of HIV among drug users by reducing the risk of engaging in risky behaviors such as needle sharing and unprotected sex. 250 people are currently receiving treatment.
Methadone is a medicine that acts as a heroin substitute. In our case, it's a syrup dosed in 10 milligram portions. Doses vary from patient to patient.
Country data show the infection rate of HIV in Senegal is about 0.5%. The rate jumps to 9% among people who inject drugs. Most patients are men, but the center is working to enroll more women in the program. UNAIDS says one adolescent girl is infected with HIV every 2 minutes globally.
Je vais dans ma communauté.
I go out into the community and visit my peers to raise awareness about getting off drugs and reducing health risks. So I refer them to CPIAD and they can, like me, stop using drugs.
In addition to HIV services, CPIAD has become a screening and diagnostic center for tuberculosis and hepatitis. It also offers psychosocial support and other wellness services.
Gardening is like a type of therapy. When we are here, we forget our problems.
While drug use is illegal in Senegal, CPIAD has the support of the government as well as other organizations like the Global Fund and UNAIDS.
As the U.S. reels from a surge of recent mass shootings, some technologists are focusing on how to prevent deaths and injuries. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with a couple of entrepreneurs who have developed gun-detecting technologies.
While the country is divided about gun rights and gun control laws, the recent mass shootings in a school, a supermarket, and at a community parade have put a spotlight on some technology that may help reduce gun deaths.
I saw people were doing facial recognition technology, and I was like, what if we use existing security cameras to detect guns?
Leif's company, Zero Eyes, developed gun detection software that uses artificial intelligence to analyze data from existing security cameras to look for a gun. Once the software determines there's a gun present,
we hit dispatch, and that alert goes through to our clients, and simultaneously will go to 911.
Rancocas Valley Regional High School in New Jersey was the first to implement the software. The school conducted an active shooter drill with the technology, which led them to the armed person in about 90 seconds, half the time it took in the same drill without the technology.
In these situations, it's all about minimizing the time, which minimizes casualties.
For large public venues, some have turned to Evolve Technologies Gates, that have scanners that use millimeter wave sensors and other technology that can detect guns and other weapons quickly.
We use advanced technology like artificial intelligence to find and discriminate between a phone and a firearm, for example.
There have been more than 300 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year. While these technologies can't guarantee the prevention of more shootings, they're among efforts to keep public spaces safe. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Zimbabwe is struggling to contain a measles outbreak that has killed nearly 700 people, most of them children and youth whose parents are in religious sects that do not trust vaccines. Health groups in Zimbabwe are calling for compulsory vaccinations to halt the spread of the virus. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwean children receive their vaccinations for measles at a clinic in the capital, Harare. Zimbabwe's government said Tuesday thousands of people have been infected with measles since an April outbreak and 698 people have died, most of them children. The death toll announced over the weekend is four times the August figure. Zimbabwe's health ministry blames some religious sects for the outbreak. It says some religious groups and traditional leaders preach against getting vaccinations. Health authorities have since been struggling to contain the infectious viral disease, which causes a rash, cough, and high fever, and can be fatal for unvaccinated children. Alex Kasasira is the World Health Organization's representative in Zimbabwe.
The measles disease is a very contagious infectious disease that spreads when the number of unvaccinated children rises beyond a critical threshold. So what we have in Zimbabwe right now is because the number of unvaccinated children has risen because of several factors. Communities who are not comfortable to have their children vaccinated, disruptions in vaccination services because of the recent COVID-19 pandemic.
The rising death toll is fueling calls in Zimbabwe for mandatory shots to hold this virus. The Zimbabwe Health Law and Policy Consortium's Tinashe Mundawarara agrees.
A compulsory immunization program has to be well planned, and it has to cover every child in this country, and that will ensure that the best interest of the child is really considered.
Zimbabwe's health authorities have not yet made the measles vaccination mandatory and were not immediately available for comment. But they have been campaigning for all children between 6 and 15 years to be immunized and are working with medical aid groups like the UN's Children's Fund, UNICEF, to educate those who resist. UNICEF Zimbabwe's Dr. Tajuddin Yowale says they are working with the government to contain the outbreak.
Just like the COVID response, the government of Zimbabwe and partners are taking seriously the current outbreak of measles that we have in the country. At present, the government has deployed rapid response team supported by UNICEF, WHO and other partners to help better track the incidence of measles. But more importantly, UNICEF and our community actors are also working hand in hand to increase awareness of the measles vaccine and also help address community resistance to the vaccination.
The measles outbreak was first reported in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province, which borders Mozambique, and have since spread nationwide. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you the biggest stories of the day. Our global correspondents report the news objectively and comprehensively, keeping you informed about important world events. International Edition provides analysis from the most seasoned experts around the world to put the day's events into context to better understand what's happening and how it may affect you. Listen to International Edition Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 Universal Time on the Voice of America or your local affiliate. You can also listen to the show on demand by visiting the program page at voanews.com or by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. VOA's International Edition, your go-to source for accurate, comprehensive, and objective news.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was amazing.